Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee, and I'm glad you joined me this morning. I, like everybody else in the world, am devastated by the loss of Robin Williams. You know, it seems like people who make other people laugh are really trying to make themselves laugh. It's comedic genius is so close to sadness. The ability to know what's going to crack somebody else up has something to do with that comedian's own psyche, their own persona. My grandchildren, who are ages from 7 to 22, have all called me devastated by the death of Robin Williams and questioning, Graham, how could somebody so funny be depressed? That's a great question, isn't it? That's a great, great question. Let's bring Shelley in this morning and let's spend some time talking about this because I suspect that he's not the only one. Good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Rainey.
How are you?
Right, so I did not hear about Robin Williams. What is the news regarding that?
It's believed that he committed suicide.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that is actually very hard to believe.
Well, it is and it isn't because he struggled with depression, bipolarism. That's been reported, and I think there's been a couple talk shows where he's even talked about his, you know, his mood swings and things like that. So, but I've read through the years that a lot of our comedic geniuses, people who can, first of all, put themselves in a place of complete ridiculousness and be okay if everybody's laughing at them, with them, for them, around them, didn't matter, they struggle with
yeah.
some kind of balance of happiness. So what do you think? You think there's a connection there?
I've seen him on talk shows when he was much younger, and he openly admitted doing all kinds of hallucinogenic drugs, a lot of drug use. He used to talk about doing LSD and things like that. So, I mean, you know, you can't do those types of heavy, heavy-duty drugs without creating some sort of a chemical imbalance or enjoying it because you already have a chemical imbalance. I mean, I certainly never wanted to do drugs, and, you know, and I know a lot of other people that don't, and I know people that do like doing drugs, but he did hardcore stuff, and he talked about it all the time, and he seems to think that some of his comedic genius came from these areas of the mind that he went into that normal people don't go. So, and if he's suffering from depression, it makes me think that he probably had this genetic defect that that was discovered, you know, a couple decades ago, that leads to addiction, that leads to these type of personality disorders, like when you talk about bipolarism and all that, and it sort of all goes together. And one of the things you said that I agree with is that a lot of comedians are like self-therapy to be a comedian because they're they're so either stressed out or unhappy or disconnected or whatever their emotional issue is or all of the above, that they're looking for a way to bring humor into their lives to take the edge off. And so we get the benefit of their brilliant minds, but what they're really doing is they're trying to create their own self-therapy, you know, by laughing at themselves and trying to laugh at their situations. And but it doesn't, unless they really, really get a handle on why they're so unhappy or why they're so stressed or where these negative emotions are coming from, unless they face it and deal with it, and a lot of them don't because they make fun of it, then they just spiral down at some point in their life. And we've seen some other tragedies. And John Candy didn't die from drug abuse. He died because of his health conditions. But John, who was the other one who did die from drugs?
John Belushi.
John Belushi was another one. I mean, he was brilliant, but he was so heavily into drugs, you know, and it really is a shame when you see that connection there.
I brought up some information this morning, and of course, a while back, there was a lot of discussion about, what was his name? The blonde, the two brothers, Owen Wilson. Owen Wilson talked about depression and all the things he had done, and he's another funny guy who is reflectively funny. Do you know what I mean when I say that?
Yes.
Does that make sense when I say that?
Yeah.
Okay. Because, like, sometimes when you look at somebody when they're, you know, when they're making other people laugh, even, remember the movie we went to see where they have the dog and Owen Wilson and the other actors, they had the dog and there was funny times and then there was sad times and everything. That, I think, is how you can see the actual swings from somebody like that. Swings. There was always scuttlebutt about Red Skelton. Remember how Red Skelton could go from the drunk or the Heathcliff and whatever they were, the seagulls that talked real funny and everything, and then he could go to the hobo who was sad with the sad face. Do you remember all those skits? Are you old enough to remember all that stuff?
I grew up on Red Skelton. Sure.
Okay. So you remember his shows, but if you reflect on those now, you think about the fact that that's what he could do. He could go from slapstick stupid to making you laugh through your tears with sadness.
Yeah.
Right? And so can Robin Williams. Robin Williams, remember The Fisher King?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that the
was
name of that movie where he was, and he was a mentally ill guy in the street, and was it Jeff Bridges who found him and spent so much time trying to get him back on his amazing movie.
That was one of my favorite movies of all times, and it was very, like you said, it was funny at times, it was tragic at times, and it was definitely poignant. But he played this character that was completely goofy and very eccentric, and he was just a goofy character living on the street, you know, wore strange clothes and acted out like he was some hero from the Knights of the Round Table and that kind of stuff. And then you find out the reality that he was actually a brilliant professor who had suffered a tragic loss of seeing his wife killed in front of him. And when you see the parallel between who his character was at another time in his life, and he wore a business suit and he had his hair groomed and he looked very, very, you know, very collegiate. And then you see what he became after his mind disintegrated, after seeing such a horrific thing happen right in front of his eyes. And you would never think this was the same person. It was such a departure from the original, you know, very well-dressed, very mannered person to this goofy, eccentric person he became as a way of his mind dealing with seeing such a violent tragedy happen in front of him. You know, and that's almost like a metaphor for what a lot of comedians do.
Well, and I also think that being able to have your intellect be able to switch back and forth to those extreme highs, to the extreme lows, that does something to you in and of itself. That, you know, crying to laughing. How many people do you know that can be laughing? I mean, really laughing about something that's so funny, and all of a sudden it turns to tears. Have you ever seen anybody done that? Have you done that yourself?
No, I've never done that myself. I only knew one person that would change their moods, like, without any provocation, really just flip back and forth. And she had emotional issues. By today's classification, she would be considered bipolar. At that time, it wasn't even a diagnosis. But I did know one individual like that could just flip in and out.
Well, let me say, I've never been diagnosed with anything like that, but I can do that, Shelley. I can be laughing so hard that I cry. That's how closely connected, in my mind at any rate, those two emotions are. I had a girlfriend when we were kids. Do you remember Pat? You met Pat, my girlfriend Pat.
Yeah.
That we've been friends since we were 16. She could do that. She could start laughing so hard, and all of a sudden she'd be crying. That's because extreme happiness or finding something so funny is so closely connected to finding something so sad. Those emotions are way out there. They're at the end of our emotion. I mean, every day you have disappointment. You have excitement. You have good things happen to you. Bad things happen to you. We are on the biggest roller coaster in the world, aren't we?
Oh, sure.
You can pick up the phone and see a number come up on your cell phone, and it's like, oh, my God, my friend so-and-so, I haven't talked to her in 2 years. Get on the phone and be so happy to hear her voice. You feel the lump in your throat, right?
I think, well, that I've experienced, you know, like seeing a movie or going to a wedding and, you know, seeing emotional scenes that are happy that, you know, that make you feel like you want to cry from happiness.
Yeah.
You know, but I've never
because
had it.
Because they're so closely connected.
Right.
Yeah, but they're just so closely connected, you know?
Yeah, that I've definitely experienced. And, from just extreme joy or, like, somebody reconciling a relationship. You know, I'm a big crier at movies. I cry very, even at cartoons. If it's an emotional scene, if it has something to do with reconciliation or finding a lost love, and that kind of stuff just makes me puddle right up.
Well, and I think those of us who have, you and I have what I consider great senses of humor. We laugh at a lot of things in life. And since day one, since our friendship began, we have always connected. I'm like a cracker. I can make a joke out of just about anything that there is. And not everybody gets my cracks. You have always picked up on my wavelength. You always know where I'm going with something. Somebody said to me the other day about how I can make people laugh about everything and that I make fun of myself. And, of course, there are people who would like to analyze the fact that I am prone. I mean, you know, I fall down and hurt my knee, and I tell everybody just what I needed, a swollen leg, like these legs could get any bigger, right? And everybody goes, oh, Renee, why do you say that? And I say, because it's the truth. Plain and simple, it's the truth. And everybody looks at me like, oh, poor Renee. She feels like, you know, and I'm not poor Renee. I laugh easily. I laugh long. But I also am, you know, emotional in other ways. I'm thinking about this because of watching my Michael this week. Because when he realized, he's going to be mad that I'm sharing this on the air, but I'm going to anyway, because I want people to understand the depth of illness, the depth of recovery is much more than what it looks like just at face value. When Mike was lucid and talking with us and still kind of in a place where he was trying to deal with the pain and still had the big drainage tubes in his throat, and there was a lot of pain involved. But I said, let me hear you breathe. And he breathed in such a deep breath, and I saw his, even the upper part of his, like up over his breast, that part of our neck between the neck bone and where your breast muscles start, fill with air. For the first time, and I can't even tell you how long it's been since he's been able to take a breath like that. And when he did that and felt that and let the air out, he welled right up in tears.
Oh, wow.
Welled right up in tears. And he said, I don't ever remember being able to breathe that deep. Not ever, Mom.
Wow.
So was he sad that he could breathe? Of course not. He was ecstatic that he could breathe, right? So those two emotions for a good deal of us are very, very close. I actually think people who struggle with a little bit of depression are closer to reality than some others, because you have to be able to realize both ends of that spectrum. I wanted to... you're never going to believe this. Here's some of the names that come up on the pages of famous people. Billy Joel struggled with depression his whole life. Brooke Shields, she explains her stuff as postpartum depression after the birth of children.
Right.
Buzz Aldrin, famous astronaut, alcohol abuse and depression. Delta Burke, she talks about being hospitalized several times for depression. Diana, Princess Diana. Now, if you think about Princess Diana, can you envision her face like in media and stuff like that and sometimes see the look of, I'm not even here, I'm here, but I'm not here? Do you remember that look on her face?
I used to call her melancholy. She just had this sweet, but not. I didn't see it as depression. Melancholy is a slightly different emotion, but I used to see her as being very melancholy all the time, and I could never put my finger on it because, to me, until I started finding out the truth about her life, to me she was like living in a fairy tale, and I was like, she has this like sadness, this cloud over her all the time, and I never quite understood.
Yeah. Like she was detached.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Like she was going through the movements, but without any kind of attachment.
Exactly.
And I love the word melancholy, by the way. Melancholy, for me, sums up a lot of things. A friend of ours, yours and mine, a guy, he describes people as being melancholy or other things, some study he did. And... I said, melancholy to me is almost every Irishman I know.
Oh, wow.
Almost every Irishman I know. If they are feeling Irishmen, Irish women, for me, they have, I don't know, kind of a specific kind of melancholy, where they can have those mood swings. They can find something, watch a Charmin commercial and get teary-eyed. You know, it's, for me, I always thought that was kind of normal to have melancholy days or days when you want to reflect on things that have happened to you or not happened to you yet or things that have been said to you or you've said to others. I think those are kind of healthy for you to have. One of the other people, well, under Diana, it says, she had serious experiences with depression and eating disorders. Drew Carey, another funny man.
Who?
He, Drew Carey.
Oh,
yes. Do you
know
who Drew Carey?
He has
attempted suicide twice. Now, this one throws me because I see this woman as being in charge, very straight-laced, although she's played some parts that weren't straight-laced. It just made me think that she's a great actress, and that's Emma Thompson. Would you have thought that about Emma Thompson, that she has suffered from depression?
And I never, it's others I've heard before, I've never heard about Emma Thompson. That does surprise me because she's so diverse in the different roles she plays.
She's amazing. Harrison Ford struggles with depression. Heath Ledger, of course, took his own life. And this is another thing, and of course we've talked about this on the show, but it's been quite a long time, insomnia. People who struggle with depression often don't ever sleep. Never sleep. Go kind of around the clock for days at a time until they take some kind of medication, and then, of course, then that starts them on that roller coaster. Here's another one that I had heard about before, but I know you like him because you watch his show, Hugh Laurie.
Oh, yeah.
House. And he suffers from depression. J.K. Rowling.
There's some parallels between him and his character, but not to the meanness of his character.
I
watched this a couple of times, but I never really House because it's too medically based, and you know I know that medicine.
Oh, you know what? It isn't you that loves it. I'm sorry. It's Nancy. Nancy never misses a House. It's not you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
But you and I've talked about his show before, though, too.
Right. Yep. But I
and
know
here's
the show
another
a times.
Yeah.
And I know the. And you can kind of almost see that that's coming from a real place in his character.
He's. You'd like to think that it's all acting, but you get the gist of the fact that he's immersed in it too much, and there's some truth to what his character does. Jim Carrey, he suffered from depression his whole life.
Wow, that
Olivia
I did not
Newton-John,
know.
Yeah. But there's another guy who immerses himself in the characters. The cable guy and the pet detective and the mask and all those things are like, oh, my God, how did you get into that place to be that character, right?
Yep. It's like no holds barred with him. He just goes to extreme, you know, and it really is astonishing to watch him because, you know, you try to imagine yourself being an actor or actress and going that far, you know, that far out, and it's like he really does have a very unique talent. Because it's like he goes to extremes with the way he portrays his characters, and he does it very expertly.
Well, and I think, I may do some more research on this so we can talk about this again with famous people, because I think sometimes if other people are listening and can relate to a movie star, or to a comedian, or to a singer, or any kind of an entertainer that they see on a regular basis, I think being able to know that you're not the only one sometimes is a saving grace. So I think this would be good to spend some time really going into these. Olivia Newton-John, she struggled with depression, and she had the disappearance, and I don't remember this story, maybe you do, her longtime partner, Patrick McDermott, disappeared. Do you remember anything about that?
Yeah, it sounds familiar. I don't remember the details, but, yeah, the minute you said that, it does sound familiar.
Yeah, I don't ever remember hearing about that. But apparently, she's been through other stuff in her lifetime, you know, that has to do with, you know, things that can certainly depress you and put you in a bad place. But there is, there's just so many that have been in that bad place. Owen Wilson, like we talked about, he was reported to have attempted suicide, but has not publicly spoken about his depression. There's people that Pete Wentz, who's from Q Magazine, Richard Jenny, who's a comedian that's kind of like on The Tonight Show, is like a filling guy. Here's one that everybody knows, Rosie O'Donnell. Her depression following the Columbine High School shooting and how she currently uses inversion therapy to help control her depression. Now, from what I know, isn't inversion therapy where you, like, get on an inversion cot and go upside down?
Yeah, I
think
so.
Isn't that what inversion therapy is?
Maybe might be something called that.
Yeah, because I don't. That's the only kind of inversion therapy that I know about is that. We'll have to find that out. Sheryl Crow, depression. Terry Bradshaw, the football player, depression. Thomas Eagleton, who was George McGovern's running mate in the presidential election, he announced that he had been treated for depression with electroconvulsive therapy and quit politician work. So there's a lot.
Well, what about the young actor? I remember the show, it was still on the air, Rizzoli and Isles, and the young actor, I think it was last September, Lee Thompson, who played the Barry Frost detective. Very, very popular show, a TNT show, very popular show. He's a young man, like in his early 20s, very handsome. He's a very handsome black man, gorgeous, hazel eyes, and they actually had to suspend the show. They didn't cancel it, thank God, and it took them a half a dozen episodes before they actually wrote the character out, and they actually did like a tribute to Lee Thompson as the tribute to the character Barry Frost. So there was a very emotional episode because a lot of what they were saying about Barry Frost in the episode is how the actors and actresses felt about the real person, the actor himself, Lee Thompson. So they said it was a very emotional episode to make, and it was like a tribute to him. But he had committed suicide also, and he was on antidepressant drugs. He had also been diagnosed as being bipolar, and everybody was in shock because a lot of times when somebody is suffering from that, they're very outspoken about it, and he wasn't. They said nobody even knew that he was seeing anybody for help with his depression. They said that on the set he was very sweet. They said the character Barry Frost, when you watch the show, they said that very much who Lee Thompson was in his real life. Very, very sweet man, very moralistic, always smiling, you know, always there to lend a helping hand, and nobody even knew that he had this dark cloud hanging over him, and they said that the cast was just absolutely stunned, you know. And because I'm a fan of the show, I was stunned because he wasn't sick, because he was young and handsome and talented, and it's like, oh my God, where did that hopelessness come from when he literally had his whole life in front of him? You know, and the fact that you know, they talked about some of the drugs he was on, and that's why I have such an issue with antidepressants, because they can lead to creating suicidal tendencies. They can actually create that sense of hopelessness in a person where they don't see the potential of their life. You know, they're only aware of a feeling of dread. And I, like I told you, I felt that once when I took Valium because I locked my neck. And thank God I've only felt that sensation once in my life, but I had enough common sense, because I don't do drugs. It's not a sensation that I ever felt before. I realized it was from the drug and that it wasn't from me, but I rationalized it and I dealt with it until the drugs wore off. But the suicidal sensation was actually there for me, and it shocked me, because this was something that was absolutely being artificially created in my body by a chemical that I was taking.
Well, you know, I've always wondered, and I've never been on Valium. I've certainly been on my share of painkillers, because I've had a, you know, surgeries. I had, you know, pretty, by today's standards, not serious, but I've had major back surgery. I had tubal ligation. I, you know, I was always on something afterwards. After my back surgery, I was on a morphine pump, and ironically, my body didn't like the morphine so much. The minute it would be released, I would be pain-free, but then I'd throw up. So they had to give me, yeah, funny, huh? They had to give me something mixed with the morphine that kept me from being, you know, from vomiting and from being that kind of sick. So,
I mean,
and that tells you a lot about our drugs. But you're looking for relief, so you go ahead and the doctors know how to fix it. So you know that there's other people that has happened to. If it was the first time it ever happened, they wouldn't know what to give me, right? So other people have struggled with that as well. So, but I think that the deal with the emotional concept of Valium and things that just kind of like dull your senses. I mean, isn't that what they do? They like alleviate pain and dull your senses. So personally, I like my senses. And if I'm sad for a reason, I'm sad for a reason. Hearing about Robin Williams' death this morning or last night was very sad. Very sad for me, because I loved him. I thought that he brought sunshine into a world where it's often very cloudy. And he will absolutely, positively be missed for those reasons. And I was in
left such a legacy behind him, which is extraordinary.
He was just a, I don't know, a light at the end of the tunnel kind of a thing. And I was kind of, like I said, called me at 10:30 last night, almost in tears, because Mikey told him that Robin Williams died, and he called me and he said, Grandma, is this true? Why would somebody who's so kill himself? And I said, well, I don't know that we know that for sure yet. This was 10:30 last night. And I said, but if he did, it's because, you know, he couldn't bring himself out of that place of despair. And very sadly, that's why most people take their life. They can't clear their head again. They can't lift themselves out of that place. And they think that's the only way out. So, and a lot of times I think it's accidental. You know, I think they do something to deaden the pain and they don't wake up from it. I think that's, but how are you ever going to know unless they come back and tell us? So,
and there was no, so they didn't talk about any kind of a suicide note or anything like that?
Mm-mm. Not that I've heard so far, but I got up early, and they're doing a whole thing remembering Robin Williams on the Today Show. They're showing old videos of him way back in the Mork and Mindy days, and everybody on Facebook signing in with Nanu Nanu. And I mean, he influenced a lot of people, a lot of people.
No, and he has such iconic characters that he's portrayed over the years. You know, and he's even portrayed some sinister characters. He didn't always do funny roles, you know.
I know.
I forgot there was that movie about he was like a serial killer or something. He was like really maniacal. I can't remember the name of the movie, 8mm or something like that. And then he was in an episode of Law and Order where he played a murderer, and and then he does these like really outlandish roles, like Mrs. Doubtfire, and you know, he's just so multi-talented. It's like he could attack anything from a leading man to somebody sinister to a Mrs. Doubtfire, you know, and handle every role just wonderfully.
Mhm. Well, I think Mrs. Doubtfire was one of the funniest movies I've ever watched in my life.
Mhm.
And I think it was, I can't hear Dude Looks Like a Lady without seeing him running the vacuum cleaner and cracking up. I just,
you know, and think
you know,
about me.
Or looking over the stove and burning the front of his boobs, you know,
yep.
I mean, hysterical.
Yep. But think about that movie, Mrs. Doubtfire. I mean, that's almost kind of what we're talking about with comedians, because when he was Mrs. Doubtfire, it was outlandish. It was, you know, it was his way of being around his kids and all that. But then when he got discovered, that part of the movie was very sad, and you felt his heart breaking, and so your heart broke. So the movie went from being hysterically funny to being tragically sad. It had a wonderful, heartfelt, good ending. But there was a part of the movie that was very, very sad, and you felt his sadness, you know. So here he's playing, you know, and it's the same actor, and he's playing this goofy role, and then he goes into this very dramatic section of the movie, and then it ends on a very sweet note. So it was a very emotional movie. Most of it was funny, but there were a few sections of it that were very, very emotional, you know, deeply emotional. And I think that's what it's like for comedians.
Yeah, I agree. I think he was absolutely one in a million. Like so many before him, you know, that's the other thing that I want to make sure that I mention. Having somebody in your life, whether it's on the television, the radio, your next-door neighbor, your best friend, your relative, your brother, your sister, your husband, your wife, that has the ability to lighten you up and make you laugh, it has to be one of the most important people in your life. Because no matter what, laughing and lightening up your emotions is the healthiest thing you can do for yourself. The easiest and the healthiest to be able to really laugh. And remember how many counselors and instructors would come to Hippocrates who would do laughing classes. Do you remember how many of them would actually try to teach people how to laugh? Did I lose you, Shell? Shelly, I think I lost you.
Sorry about that.
Oh,
my dog's
okay.
Making noises. I muted my phone from it.
I
totally agree with that, you know, because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, these guys would come in and they would make you fake laugh at first, and then it would turn into a real laugh. Just,
mm-hmm.
It's like fake yawning, and then all of a sudden you're yawning for real. Certain things do create a reaction, a physiological reaction in the body that actually turns into the real thing. you know, so if you fake yawn, if you fake laugh, all of a sudden you're, it inspires a real reaction from the body. And whether it starts out fake or not, it's like if you're in a bad mood, people tell you to smile. And just the act of smiling uplifts you. And it works. Just changing your physical facial expression actually does impact your mind. It's unbelievable that something so simple, but I've felt it myself hundreds of times. It's why I don't, like if I'm having a bad day and somebody asks me how I'm doing, I don't start regaling them with what's going on. I just smile and say, oh, I'm doing pretty good. And the act of smiling and professing I'm doing pretty good actually lightens my load a little bit. It doesn't mean that I don't still have to deal with what I'm dealing with, but all of a sudden it's been lightened a little bit, you know, just by smiling at somebody else and sharing that little token of hope, you know. Yeah, doing pretty good, you know. And then I actually do feel better.
I will too. I do too, honey. I do too. I love it. If somebody, and I do this all the time, and I've talked about this on the show, walking through Walmart, which can be a very stressful trip in Walmart, depending on what kind of people are there. I mean, I've had to step in between a mother beating her child. I've had to step in between two young people getting ready to come to blows. Walmart can be quite an exciting adventure. But when I walk through, and one day I'm walking through, I'd just come from court, and I had on a long black skirt and one of my black blouses that has some silver sparkly stuff on it and a black jacket and my butterfly necklace that Big Spike gave me. And I'm walking through, and this elderly woman stops in front of me and looks at me, and she says, "You look beautiful." I was like, "Oh, my God, thank you." You know, oh, my God, you know, and I smiled at her, and I think I grew 2 inches. I was smiling at everybody. She didn't have to say that to me.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter whether it was true or not either, by the way. It was just hearing it was wonderful. So ever since that happened, I don't know, like 6 or 7 months ago, but ever since that happened to me, I've done it 2 or 3 times to somebody else or said to them, "Oh, I love your outfit," or something. And I thought to myself, you know, it's such a small thing, and yet maybe it made their whole day too. I should have remembered that from all the years of working in a restaurant. Because some people would come in and I'd know I was the only person that they talked to all day long.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Yeah.
So it is the fact that you can get somebody to lighten your load every now and then is very, very important to all of us. And I think that's why so many comedians struggle with this, because maybe it's too big a responsibility, Shel. You know, maybe if they really, really embrace the fact that they know that they can make people laugh, and by making fun of themselves in a lot of cases, maybe that's too big a responsibility. Maybe that has something to do with the depression and the suicidal rate. What do you think?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting point. And I think there might be some sort of an element there where they do feel the pressure of the expectations of their fans, and maybe that's a negative pressure, not a good thing. Although I know that most of them are just addicted, for lack of a better word to use, are addicted to the limelight. They need the fans. They need the notoriety. They need that fame, you know. So I'm not so much that I don't think it's the fans that are affecting or the fans' reaction to them. I think it's the reason they're out there is, like I said, is sort, and then this is just my own opinion, is sort of like self-therapy.
Right.
And when it doesn't mitigate the things that haunt them, when no matter how much fame they get, no matter how many incredible roles they get, it doesn't seem to mitigate that sense of being disoriented or not connected with life or having all this major success and still not feeling good. It's like they keep trying to feel this sense of wholeness and belonging, and no matter how successful they become, and no matter, you know, I mean, you look at the young man who was in his 20s, and then you look at Robin Williams, who was in his 60s, and that sense of hopelessness, you know, that you can be that successful and obviously very wealthy. Robin Williams would have been wealthy. The other actor would have been very young, probably didn't have any wealth amassed yet. But Robin Williams certainly was financially good. And yet it doesn't make them feel good. And this is one of the things that when you talk about that genetic defect, and I just based on hearing what he went through, I'm pretty sure he would have had that defect. No matter how good things are going for you, you don't feel okay with life. And that's why a lot of these people turn to drugs, because they don't know how else to feel okay. And that's why I would like there to be more research on holistic ways of getting people's minds functioning better, because antidepressants have such a long history of tragedy associated to them. You know, it's like putting a Band-Aid on a broken arm. You know, it masks the issue. It makes them feel like they're gaining a little bit of control, but there's so much tragedy associated with antidepressant drugs. And it happens to famous people, and it happens to children, that there has to be a better way. And I would really like to see more research being done using things like Bach flower remedies and nutritional aids and holistic healing and things like that to bring a person, especially if they have this genetic defect, into a sense of better connectedness with the world around them, some way of calming this sense of dread and hopelessness and allowing light to come into their lives. I'm absolutely positive that there has to be a better way.
Well, and I agree with that. We've talked about that many, many times on the show when we've talked about mental illness, the week we did mental illness, when we talked about depression and we talked about all the different things that go with depression, eating disorders and insomnia and all the kind of things that plague people that can't get themselves to some kind of a plateau where they're not so reachable by all of these insecurities and maladies that attack people every day. The fact is that all these comedians and these famous people that we just talked about are plagued with depression, anxiety, bipolar disorders, schizophrenia, all the things that we've talked about so many times, tells you that everybody is reachable for mental illness and for depression.
Right.
I think, yeah, and I think the people that dedicate their lives to making other people laugh are more prone, because I think their mood swings are greater, like the Robin Williamses of our lifetime, like the Red Skeletons, like I was thinking about Dick Van Dyke the other day, because they showed him on something on TV, and I thought to myself, here's another one, the pratfalls, the ability to look like a rag doll, and he'd made people laugh all the time. I've read stories about Dick Van Dyke suffering from depression.
Oh, yes. I remember that.
Yep. And alcoholism and all of the things that go with that. I think, but he was another one who was not above doing anything to make you crack up, you know. So it is what it is, I think, but I think that part of it is they choose that vocation to kind of help themselves, and sometimes it lifts them up and pulls them away from that kind of a destiny, and sometimes it doesn't.
True.
It's a heartbreak, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, it's definitely
because
heartbreak.
We need more. Mm-hmm. It is. It's a horrible thing.
He's another prime example. Now, John Belushi was getting away from the Animal House type comedy roles that he did, and he was actually performing in his first serious role when he died. So he didn't die from suicide. He died from an accidental overdose. you know, because here he was actually going to be very successful, the first dramatic role, the movie was supposed to be coming out in months, and then here he didn't even get to finish, you know, finish the particular movie, so it was a tragedy. But the fact that he had this potential shift coming down the road for him, where he was going to be able to show people that he had more in-depth acting ability, but he couldn't stop doing the drugs, you know. So there's something there that obviously wasn't quite right with him, that he felt the need to constantly self-medicate that extensively.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, and I found a site that is in alphabetical order. The people who, well, let me see. I see it goes back to the 40s. 40s. Do I see any? Oh, 1932, Peg Entwistle, never heard of her, Welsh-born American actress, leapt to her death from the H in the Hollywood sign.
Oh, my God. I remember that.
Yeah. Freddie E., who was a hip-hop singer in 2013, and his comedy and his spoken word pieces, shot himself in the head, and all of, but it gets, you know, it gets heavier than that. Ernest Hemingway shot himself in the head. Ernest Hemingway gave so many gifts to our world.
Oh my God!
Yeah, Adolf Hitler killed himself. Of course, he had a good reason, but. I mean, there's a lot of names here that I don't really know, but then there's some that I never knew that that some of these people took their own lives.
But even like Edgar Allan Poe, didn't he suffer from like severe depression? Or I mean, I think that's where some of his macabre imagination came from. You know, Stephen King, his imagination came from being haunted by terrible nightmares throughout his entire life, and so that's where a lot of his creativity came from, again, as a source of self-therapy. You know, let's get this out of my head and down on paper, and maybe I can lessen its impact. You know, but a lot of times the great creativeness is in people's attempt to deal with something that's pervasive with them, you know.
Well, that has to be it. I mean, that has to be a big part of it. Not, like I said, not being able to tie up all those loose ends and make yourself whole. You know, they run off in all these different emotional paths, and then they can't they bring it all in and become whole again. Listen to this. Socrates, in 399 before Christ, classical Greek Athenian philosopher, credited as one of the founders of Western philosophy, drank poison, probably hemlock, because Socrates was forced to poison himself to death as his sentence following his conviction for impiety and corrupting the minds of the youth of Athens. The question of whether this constitutes a genuine suicide is a subject of constant debate. Now, there's something I never knew. Did you know that about Socrates?
No, I did not.
That's but they're not saying that it was an absolute suicide. They're saying that he might have been made to do that.
Huh.
Vincent Van Gogh, the Impressionist, shot himself. I mean, these people are part of our history.
Yep.
Part of our history. Well, and
yep.
Robin Williams already on this list. Can you believe that? 2014, American comedian and actor, death via asphyxiation.
Wow. Asphyxiation.
Yeah. I don't.
How do you asphyxiate yourself?
I don't know. But that I heard that earlier this morning, and I thought they were going to find out, you know, something else. The only thing I know about asphyxiation is that thing that you do sexually, so I'm hoping that's not what they're talking about. But, and if it is, I hope they don't share it with everybody. But I don't know. Unless there's some kind of drug that stops you from breathing. But doesn't the word asphyxiation mean stopping your breath? I mean, doesn't it mean
you can't breathe? Put a pillow over
somebody
and that's asphyxiating them. That's what I'm saying. How do you do that to yourself?
I don't know. We'll probably find out more in the days to come. But there is Frank Nitti, Chicago gangster in charge of Al Capone's strong arm and muscle operations, and later the front man for Capone's, I can't read this morning, crime syndicate, gunshot to the head. I didn't know he killed himself either, Frank Nitti. One of my kids, I think Spike, did a report on gangsters, and we got really, the whole family got into hearing about all the different gangsters. That's a very interesting subject. World of gangsters.
Wow.
How they changed their lives and what they did to be big in that arena. Hannibal, the military commander, he poisoned himself. Lots of actors and actresses, lots of people at the forefront of wars and things like that. Cleopatra led a snake biter. Of course, we all hear about that. Kurt Cobain, another one who everybody knows shot himself in the head. It's a long list, Shell. It's a long, long list of somewhat famous people. The president of Chile, there's just, you know, it's a sad state of affairs when you realize this many people take their own lives. I remember when I was a kid, there's a cemetery in Ithaca that is on one of the long side streets. It's a big cemetery. And I was told when I was a kid, and I never found out if this is true, I should research this, but there is a tomb, not a tomb, a headpiece of an angel that sits way over in a separated part of the cemetery. And when I was a kid, I want to say my dad told me, maybe to make an impression on me, I don't know why exactly, that person had committed suicide so he couldn't be buried with everybody else.
Yeah.
And I've never forgotten that. I'm pretty sure that's not true now that I'm an adult. Or years ago, I figured it wasn't true. But that's what my dad told me. So I thought
Times if somebody committed suicide, they weren't permitted to be buried if it was a Catholic cemetery. I was raised the same.
Yeah, dad being raised a Catholic, maybe he believed that. So we're out of time. This discussion bears touching on again sometime in the future. My love and heartfelt, I don't even know what to call them, but my heart aches for the family of Robin Williams and for all the young people who will never experience his comedy and his love of making people laugh. I think that's a shame.
Thank God it's all archived in movies and recorded shows, because other generations can experience him.
Yeah, for sure they can, like that. That's true. I mean, that's true of a lot of our very, very special comedians. So, but he will be missed, that's for sure. I hope everybody goes out and has a good day. It looks like a beautiful sunny day here in South Florida. I hope wherever you are, the sun is shining, and you have a great, great day. So everybody go out there and make it the best. God bless. Thanks, Shell. You want to say goodbye to everybody? You got a few seconds.
Yeah, goodbye, everybody. God bless to Robin Williams and his family and his fans. He'll be terribly missed, and I honor his memory. One of my all-time favorite actors and comedians. So God bless Robin Williams. Everyone have a wonderful day, and we will talk to you again in the morning.
Bye-bye, everybody. Bye, Shel.